Well, in the second verse of our text, you see that chapter 6, verse 2, "Oh, that my vexation were weighed." That's a Hebrew word that is fairly uncommon. It's just, you just don't see it a lot in the Old Testament. Translated vexation here in the ESV, or if you're using the KJV, you see that it's grief, which is probably a pretty good translation of the word. Here, it kind of sets the tone for us, not only for chapter 6 and chapter 7, but really for the rest of the book up until God begins to speak to Job. And Job was a man who's familiar with provocation, frustration, because he was thrust into these highly unusual circumstances in life. In fact, the word is often translated provocation, or in the verb form, provoke, in the Old Testament. Like when God's people wandering out around the wilderness provoked God, Deuteronomy 32, verse 19. How'd God feel? Or she used with Hannah's competing wife. I know that's a strange term, but you know the story, 1 Samuel 1, 6, as she provoked Hannah day after day. Or like all the provocations of King Manasseh that finally stirred God to the point of sending his people into captivity and destroying the nation, 2 Kings 23. Now that word provocation could just as easily be translated affliction. And affliction can have a deleterious effect on people, even God's people. You know, on the one hand, the Bible teaches us that it's not uncommon that when we find ourselves in adversity, the true character of our heart comes out. In fact, we have often said, especially in these latter days, that we are like sponges. And when the affliction of life squeezes us, our true character comes out and it's revealed. On the other hand, it's also clear that adversity can shape the character of our hearts, that for good or even for bad. And I think that's a process that we begin to see happening early on in this story with Job, all the way back in chapter 3. If from the outset of this story, Job's character is stated for us in unequivocal terms. I mean, it's just flatly, pointedly stated. Verse 1, chapter 1, a man in the land of Uz named Job, this man was blameless and upright, one who feared God, turned away from evil. And God reaffirmed that sterling character two times in this argument with Satan, as Satan challenged him to put Job to the test. Now, Job's character was rock solid. There's no question about that. But beginning with chapter 3, I think we might begin to see some evidence that because of this incredible adversity into which Job had been thrust, it was causing him to respond contrary to his character by which he'd already been known. You know, maybe adversity was beginning to shape Job's character contrary to his reputation. Be that as it may, Job was not going to forsake his integrity. He was not going to curse God. Even as God promised, Satan would be the outcome of this test, and it was going to be so. But this stress from affliction becomes very obvious. As the stress is compounded by these miserable counselors who come along supposedly to give him help, and now you see Job's response to the added affliction that Eliphaz brought into his life. You saw that in chapter 4 and chapter 5. Now in chapter 6 and chapter 7, we see a response to that. And you start to wonder what's happening with Job here. In these two chapters, you will find 23 questions. Most of them are rhetorical questions. But of these 23 questions, 14 of them are not just context or are directed towards the chapter 7, the other 9 questions. explaining the way things are, why things are working out the way they are. These are the principles of life. We'd sure like to find somebody like that, wouldn't we? But that dream and that desire very often just doesn't come to fruition. So we cry out to God. And all we're asking is, God, could you give me an explanation about what you're doing, what you're trying to teach me? I really do want to learn, God, but I need to know, what is this lesson? And all we hear is crickets. No answer from God. That's Job. Now we can observe Job. We can hear Job's cry. We need to identify with him as much as we can. We need to sympathize. But most of all, we need to learn some very important lessons from Job as he almost looks like he's unwinding here. 14 questions to counselors that deal with his frustration because of his circumstances. He blurts out something like, oh, that my vexation could be measured. You know, what's going on? If you could just understand how much I am suffering, how heavy is the burden that I bear? Verse 1. Job answered and said, oh, that my vexation were weighed and my calamity laid in the balances. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words have been rash. Now we know there's just no way at all to measure, somehow weigh, determine the size of the intensity of the problem, the troubles that you're going through. We can't weigh your affliction. But Job says, if you could, my stress, my trouble in life would weigh as much as all the sand of the sea, and that's even impossible for us to imagine what that would be. Definitely hyperbole. But Job felt it. The big question is, what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it? And Job comes to that conclusion, verse 4, he says, what am I supposed to do? I have the warrior called the Almighty God, and he's arrayed against me. Verse 4, the arrows of the Almighty are in me, my spirit drinks their poison, the terrors of God are arrayed against me. Yeah, Job is feeling very much like the citizens of Mansoul in Bunyan's classic work, The Holy War. It's a story, and the city represents a child of God who's gone into rebellion against God and their sin in the city. And so God, loving his people, sends this almighty warrior, Jesus Christ, to the city gates with all the divine power that it takes to attack sin and flesh out sin, and root out the sin of the city, Mansoul. And those people felt intensely the arrows of the righteous one, Jesus Christ. And that's what Job is saying. What do you do? What can you do when the invisible God is aiming his invisible arrows at you and they are hitting the mark? And they're painful. Emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. And the most discouraging point in all of that is, these are God's arrows. You know they're God's arrows. And so setting up his argument about how he feels about this, how frustrated, how nonplussed. I don't even know what to think. Job gives us a couple of illustrations, one from the animal kingdom here. He says, you know, animals don't make a lot of noise. They don't bray or moo when they're satisfied. Verse 5. Does a wild donkey bray when he has grass or the ox low over his fodder? No. Does somebody eat tasteless food if he doesn't have to? Verse 6. Can that which is tasteless be eaten without salt, or is there any taste in the juice of the mouth? No. And Job says, well, guys, listen. Neither do I have any appetite for all the advice you're giving me because it's empty. You're not telling me anything I don't already know, and you're not helping matters because you are not explaining why God is doing what God is doing to me. That's all in verse 7. My appetite refuses to touch them. They're as loathsome food to me. Your counsel's pointless. And the more Job talks here, the worse things seem to get. And it gets to the point where he just very rashly blurts out, oh, that God would just kill me. You know, this is the second death wish already that we see from Job, right? Remember chapter 3, 19 verses there? He just goes on. I mean, just better that I would not have been born. Would have been better if I was still born. Worse that I was even conceived to begin with. Verse 8, oh, that I might have my request, that God would fulfill my hope, that it would please God to crush me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. Now, honestly, when I read these and when I read chapter 3, I don't think Job is suicidal here. But his affliction was so bad, he believes the only way this is ever going to happen, come to an end, is if I die. You ever feel that way? You ever have kidney stones? I remember when I had my first bout of kidney stones. Man, I got sick. I got so sick, I was afraid I was going to die. And then the pain got worse, and I was afraid I wasn't going to die. That's how Job felt. You know, I can't handle this. It should be a lot better if, Lord, if you just let me go. More directly, notice what he's saying. God, would you quit putting pressure on me? Just go ahead and kill me if you want to. You know, folks, if we really trust God and we really trust the truths that we find in his word, don't we know that God is in control of these things? That is a wonderful theory. But when the pain of affliction is pressing us down, do we really think about God being in control, or do we really think, you know, death would be better? Verse 10. This would be my comfort. I would even exult in pain unsparing, for I have not denied the words of the Holy One. You know, I have tried to be blameless and upright and staying away from evil. Verse 11, what is my strength that I should wait, and what is my end that I should be patient? Is my strength in the strength of stones or the flesh of bronze? Have I any help in me when resource is driven from me? It's hopeless. Those are the words of a man who's at the end of his rope. What do you tell somebody when they come to this point? They say, I don't even know how to think or feel. That's the way it is when the sufferer wakes up every single day knowing. It's going to be the same today. This isn't changing. It's not going anywhere. I know how this day is going to go, and there's no help in me. The resource is driven from me. What do you say to a Job kind of person? What kind of advice, what kind of recommendations are you going to offer? Now, how do you sit by and watch your friend and loved one suffer like this and know full well you really don't have anything to say that's going to alleviate the problem? You don't have the magic bullet. So often, we end up giving advice, trying to express our sympathy, and it just comes out all wrong. And we sound a lot like Eliphaz, don't we? And when we sound like Eliphaz, we're really not helping matters much. And so Job pours out this frustration with his counselors. They haven't helped. He who withholds kindness, that's a wonderful Hebrew word that talks about the changeless love of God. You know, this is the kind of word in the Old Testament talking about God's love that would be equivalent to the New Testament word agape that we'll talk about tonight. that changeless love of God that is not affected by circumstances. He who withholds that kind of thing from his friends, he doesn't have any right respect for the Almighty. Verse 15, my brothers are treacherous as a torrent bed, as torrential streams that pass away, which are dark with ice, where the snow hides itself. When they melt, they disappear. When it's hot, they vanish from their place. Remember, wherever Job is, wherever Uz was, it was somewhere in the arid Middle East. Hot, dry. Where if they could find a consistent source of water, a spring that was always there, I mean, that was very valuable. That was a treasure to those people. And Job says, you know, that's not the same thing as one of these wadis, these dry riverbeds. You can see them all over Israel and that whole part of the Middle East, where there's just nothing there, but you wait until it rains, or you wait until the ice begins to melt and the snow begins to melt up in the mountains and it comes rushing down. And Job talks about the black ice, the dark ice here. He says, oh, that's really great. It's useless because it dries up very quickly, provides no lasting sustenance. And our counsel to the sufferer can be just about that useful. You know, so often when somebody is going through affliction like this, it's long term. And they need our long term commitment. And they need our faithful, sympathetic Bible wisdom. And you pour yourself into those people and you try to help them, and sometimes it just feels like you say the same thing over and over and over, but it's still true. And sometimes you do start to feel like, I almost feel like I'm being used. But you're not. It's all part of the process of healing. Just constantly, consistently, over and over and over, leading to the same place, pointing to the same direction. Jesus Christ is your rock. He is your foundation. The truth of God's Word is your hope. It is your help. God will never change. God will never go back on His promises. He's given us these promises for our health, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically. It's hard for us to stay in that balance, you know? It's hard for us not to move too quickly and give too much advice. They're not ready for it. Or on the other hand, we move too slowly. And we're not giving any advice, or we're not giving good biblical advice. And you know what that sounds like to the one who's suffering? Failure. And boy, when you look at Job's counselors, they didn't exactly stay balanced. Job knew that. He felt that, and he said, they're a disappointment to me. He said, you guys are like those streams, those rushing, muddy waters that come down the dry riverbed, and all of a sudden you're gone. And what good is that to somebody who needs help, like maybe people in a caravan, verse 18? The caravans turn aside from their course, they go up into the waste and perish. The caravans of Tema look, and the travelers of Sheba hope. They're shamed because they were confident. They come there and they're disappointed. Now, this probably doesn't mean a lot to us, but I think it would have meant a whole lot to Job and his counselors, because they were very familiar with caravans trekking their way through the deserts, the wilderness. In fact, I think Job was probably involved in a venture like this. What else do you do with 3,000 camels? I mean, you only have so many live nativities you do a year, where you need a camel, yeah. What do you do with 3,000 camels? You have caravans. He mentions two cities here that were located on the major trade routes in Saudi Arabia. Modern Saudi Arabia. Northwestern Arabia, you had the city of Tema. In southwestern area, you had the city of Sheba. And what Job is saying is this. Okay, you link verse 18, 19, 20 with the previous two verses. Here come the caravans through the desert, and they need a source of water, obviously. And so maybe they go to a well, or maybe to a stream that has been dependable and has provided for them in the past, and they get there and it's dry. Well, what do? Oh, they start up into the hills looking for water. They have to have a source of water or they're going to be destroyed. They find none. They perish. Job says, that's how I see you guys. You came with hope. You came as my counselors. But you're like a dry river bed to me. And you're not sustaining me. You're not satiating my thirsty soul. And they just offered no satisfaction. Verse 21, for me, or for you, have now come to nothing. You see my calamity? You're afraid? Now wait a minute. These are three guys who sacrificed their time, right? We know they came from a distance. We don't know how long, but we know they traveled a distance. We know according to chapter 2:13, they've already sat there 7 days and said nothing, sitting in the dust and the ashes, not saying a word. I mean, to me, that would be absolute agony itself. Then Eliphaz talks. And when he does, he sets the tone for the conversations for the next 27 chapters. And it's not a good tone. Supposedly, they're giving wisdom. But all of the wisdom of all these counselors, these three counselors, all those words for 27 chapters do not understand what God is doing to Job. They really don't understand Job's circumstances. Words of wisdom? Yeah. They just don't apply. So, it's interesting. Notice what Job says here about them. You're afraid. You see my calamity, and you're deep down, you really don't know what to say, and you really don't know how to handle this thing. And I get it. When God is doing a unique work in a person's life, all the human wisdom we can muster will not satisfy. They have to have something more than that. It's so easy for us to be like these useless counselors. Because when we take wisdom, even wisdom of the Bible, and we begin to misapply it to a person's circumstances, do you realize that actually instead of helping, adds frustration? Bigger questions, why? To the troubling soul. So Job really did feel like there just wasn't any justice from his friends. And he's frustrated. I mean, isn't a friend in need a friend indeed, right? I mean, we say that. It's kind of what he says in verse 22 and 23. Have I said, make me a gift, or from your wealth offer a bribe for me? Or deliver me from the adversary's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the ruthless? Job says, listen, I have not used my affliction and my suffering as an opportunity to put pressure on you. I haven't expected anything from you. I didn't want to be a burden. I don't demand anything. But if you're my friend, aren't you going to do something? Won't you help me in some way? Instead, what do I get? Instead of getting help, instead of getting encouragement, I get this speech from Eliphaz indicating that I deserve what I'm getting. God's just punishing me. Are you sympathetic with Job? I mean, do you feel why he feels this way? Now watch, something interesting happens here in verse 34. Very suddenly, there's this change. You know, up to this point, he's been sort of aggressive, hasn't he? He's been a little bit defensive. I don't blame him. All of a sudden, he says, teach me. I'll be silent, verse 34. 24, I'm sorry. If you find 6:34, let me know what version you're reading. This is 24, all right? Teach me and I will be silent. Make me understand how I've gone astray. See, there's a difference between teaching and rebuke. Teaching first attempts to reveal the need, and then it offers a solution. What do you do if you've actually revealed useful information? You have identified the need, you have described the need, and you have given the solution, which will be in the Word of God. What do you do when you've done all that and a person says, listen, I am so angry, I'm so frustrated, I'm so mad about this affliction in my life, I don't care what you say, I'm not going to do it. Well, at that point you rebuke. And rebuke would be fitting and right. Because when the process is rejected, well, there is no hope. And then you rebuke and say, no. You need to come under the authority of God and His Word. You see, Eliphaz didn't do that. Eliphaz went right to the rebuke. His presumption was, I know what's going on here, and I know what God is doing to Job, and I know why God's doing this to Job, and so Job needs rebuke. Which indicates to me that probably Eliphaz was pretty stubborn, selfish, and rebellious himself, and he's probably the one who needed the rebuke, but he didn't show any sympathy. Job says, I just want some sympathy. Teach me gently. Which is not exactly what Eliphaz was doing. Verse 25, how forceful are your upright words, but what does reproof from you reprove? You're trying to say that I'm wrong, but you don't have any evidence that I'm wrong. The reproof isn't working. Now, granted, there's a time for rebuke. Job didn't need that right now. Job's spirit was already crushed. Job was not in rebellion against God. You know, Job wasn't fighting God. Verse 26, do you think that you can reprove words when the speech of a despairing man is nothing but wind? Yeah. If my words are empty like you say they are, Eliphaz, why are you trying to prove that I'm wrong? Verse 27, would you even cast lots over the fatherless and bargain over your friend? What Job's saying here basically is this. You guys are being hyper-justice here. You're trying to take justice to an extreme that you don't understand because you don't understand the application. Now, here I am a needy person, and you're putting a squeeze on me, and that's not what I need. And so he pleads for mercy, verse 28. Now be pleased to look at me, for I will not lie in your face. Please turn, let no injustice be done. Turn now, my vindication is at stake. Is there any injustice on my tongue? Cannot my palate discern the cause of calamity? You know what Job is saying here? He's saying, come on guys, I'm just begging you, change your attitude. Change the direction that you're taking in this whole thing. Relent is what the word means. Quit it. And change your attitude to a positive attitude. Give me some help here, an understanding attitude. You know, Job's words are focusing on his hopelessness and on his frustration, how awful his situation is. That's true. We understand that. But he wasn't being dramatic. I mean, he truly felt hopeless, and he said, I need some help. Where's your sympathy? Okay, was it right for Job to go after his friends like this? I think so. Yeah, I think they were in the wrong. Maybe his attitude's a little bit out of line, but it was right. But God? Because he does the same thing with God. He takes this bitter voice, he said, I'm speaking out of bitterness of soul, and he directs it toward God. And he has to acknowledge, you know, I'm under affliction. Of course you are. That's life, Job. Everybody has affliction. Verse 1. Has not man a hard service on earth? Are not his days like the days of a hired hand, like a slave who longs for shadow, like hired hand who looks for his wages? So I'm allotted months of emptiness and nights of misery. They're a portion unto me. You know, we often have a question, how long his trial went on? Did you see that key right there? Months of affliction? Now, we know that Job's friends have been sitting with him for 7 days, but this has been going on for a while, apparently. What all Job is saying here is something we all know, right? Because of the principle of sin in life, we have afflictions. You know, the short version of this God gave when he uttered the curse against the earth because of man's sin. Cursed is the ground because of you. See, you notice the last part of verse 17 here. In pain, you'll eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns, thistles, it shall bring forth. You'll eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. Out of it you were taken, for you are dust. To dust you'll return. Doesn't look very hopeful. That's the short version of why there's affliction in life. That's why you and I are going to have problems. The world's cursed because of sin. But the real version, the real long answer is this curse, as simple as it is, just works out in all kinds of different afflictions, a variety of afflictions in life. So that at various times and on various levels, we are going to feel exactly like Job says in verse 2. I feel like a slave who longs for a shadow, like a hired man who just wants to, I just want a break. Can you hear Job saying, God, give me a break. You've allotted months of emptiness and nights of misery. They're a portion to me. That is my portion. You get the idea that sometimes affliction just seems like it's endless. Verse 4, when I lie down, I say, shall I arise? But the night's long, I'm full of tossing. You know, I can't even sleep. You know, I'm in pain during the day. I'm in pain during the night. Maybe it's emotional. Maybe it's physical. My flesh, verse 5, is clothed with worms and dirt. My skin hardens, breaks out afresh. That's kind of an ugly description of what he was dealing with, the symptoms. So much so that it just seems like I have these days where it's hopeless. Verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle, and they come to their end without hope. And my frustrations just keep mounting. So finally, I'm just going to lay it out on God. God, why do you even bother? You know, I'm a mess. I've lost everything. I've lost my health. I've got these scabs, worms are eating me. I'm sitting in the dirt. Why do you even focus on a guy like me whose life is passing so quickly? Verse 7, remember that my life is breath. My eye will never see good again. The eye of him who sees me will behold me no more. While your eyes are on me, I shall be gone. As the cloud fades, vanishes, so he goes down to Sheol. And he doesn't come up. He returns no more to his house, nor does his place know him anymore. Job says, that's exactly how life feels to me. I'm that slave. I'm that hired one who just, I'd like to have a break, but I don't have any hope that it's ever going to come about. And God, you know, my life is just passing like a vapor, like a cloud, verse 7. All in the context of the suffering and affliction. And I know I'm going to end up going down to the grave and I'm going to be forgotten, verse 8. Ecclesiastes, of course, that's what we learned from Solomon. In fact, he even offers a command to God, verse 7. Remember that my life is breath, my eye will never see good again. God, do this. It's not really a request, it's a command. God, remember me. That is a key phrase about Job's continuing faith in God. You know, in all of this, he's just unloading. He's just dumping out on all of his counselors. He's dumping out on God. And he says, it's not fair. And I don't understand what's going on. And all I know is I'm a mess. And this whole life is coming to an end. But God, remember me. He hasn't lost faith yet. has he? Just like God said to Satan, he's not going to deny his fate. It's going to get bad. There are times through this story where it really does look like Job's faith is wavering quite a bit. I mean, obviously, right here in these verses, it's very obvious that he is hopeless. But in all of this, Job's faith did not waver in that he thought somewhere, sometime, somehow, God is going to hear my plea and God's going to answer me. Of course, you already read the end of the book. You have read the end of the story, so you know how it ends, right? He's right. God does hear and God does answer. And every time that God hears us in whatever circumstances we are crying out to Him, we always remember He hears us because He's kind and gracious. Not because we deserve it. Now, why would God bother with us? Verse 17. What is man that you make so much of him that you set your heart on him? You visit him every morning, you test him every moment. You know, God, I'm so insignificant. I just don't matter. Why do you show any attention? You know, why are you interested in mere humans who just pass by so quickly? You ever ask that question? When you're really, really, really afflicted like Job, maybe to some extent, you just say, God, why are you bothering? You know what the answer is? Because God made you in His image. And He is reflecting His glory, His image, through you. And that's why He doesn't give up. And you just have to remember, all the time you are holding on to God, what's really more important than that is that He's holding on to you. You know, it's really not all that important that you grip His hand so tightly because He's gripping your hand. That's why He cares. And in this affliction and in this trial and in this testing, God is bringing His image closer to the surface so more and more people can see that you look more and more and more like your Creator God. That's exactly what He is doing. Job couldn't see that at this point. So this mere hopeless man who's passing away and he wonders why God has anything to do with him, well, I guess I'll just go ahead and complain to God. And man, he just admits, this is just erupting out of the bitterness of my soul, verse 11. Therefore, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Am I the sea or a sea monster that you set a guard over me? When I say that my bed will comfort me, my couch will ease my complaint, then you scare me with dreams and you terrify me with visions so that I would choose strangling to death rather than my bones. I loathe my life. I would not live forever. Leave me alone. Days are but a breath. I mean, ultimately, Job really does trust God, but he sure does let it fly here, doesn't he? I mean, he just unloads on God. I don't know maybe how you feel when you read this. I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. And I am talking to you, God. That kind of sends a shiver up my spine. I hope I don't get like that. And I wonder if I've been like that. Why is he like this? Because his heart is sunk in bitterness. He's losing sight of the God who loves him. Anguish of spirit. That is a very picturesque word. What Job is saying is this. God, I was going down the path that I thought you intended for me. And I find myself going into this very narrow valley, and now I find myself in a chasm, and I'm between rocks. And I look up on both sides, it's just rock walls as high up as I can see, and it just gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And so I'm starting to decide, maybe I better turn around. God, you know what? You just pushed me. And now I'm stuck. And I can't go forward, and I can't go left, and I can't go right. And I can't even turn around back up. And God, you did this to me. You put me in that spot. And that's why I have anguish of spirit. I don't know what to do. I'm sunk. Stuck in unrelenting affliction. And that makes my soul bitter. You know that word. That's Mara. That's the word that describes poor Naomi. Child of God. There's a famine. There are circumstances beyond her control. So she and her husband, they move down to Moab. And while they're in Moab, they have kids. Two sons get married. And then one day, things happen. And pretty soon, her husband's dead. And her son is dead. And her other son is dead. And a widow in that day was vulnerable. And what does she say? Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Bitter. Why? The Almighty did this. God did this. He made me bitter. You know, both Naomi and Job prove what Jesus meant. When he said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And when you hear somebody who's talking like this and just saying, you know, God's so unfair, God has done this and that, he doesn't understand, they're having heart trouble. They really need the work of God in their heart because they're feeling trapped. And they're feeling like God is making them bitter. They're forgetting about who God is. Not realizing that, you know, in life as we're dealing with affliction because we're dealing with a sinful life, there are going to be these times where we have affliction and we just really do not understand, and there just may not be answers to the questions. Verse 19. Why do you not pardon my transgression, take away my iniquity? For now I shall lie in the earth, and you'll seek me but not find me if I sin. What do I do to you, you watcher of mankind? Why have you made me your mark? Why have you become a burden to me? You watcher. You know, that word means to gaze upon, sometimes with approval, sometimes with interest or curiosity. And Job says, you know, really, as far as I can tell, this affliction in my life is because you keep looking at me, God, and you keep gazing at me, and you're interested in me, and I really don't want you to be interested in me. And if I do sin, what's that to you? What? Job, all sin is an offense and an attack on God's character. Besides, Job, you've been saying that as far as you know, there is no sin. Yeah, but just in case, verse 21, why do you not pardon my transgression, take away my iniquity? You know, just in case I have sin, question, 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 23 of them. And in time, God is going to answer every one of these questions. And he's going to start by asking a question. Who is this who darkens counsel? Job. And in time, God is going to answer your questions. I know we have questions. We're not God. We're not even close. We're finite. There's a lot we don't understand. And one thing maybe that we don't understand the most is that in our affliction, our God who loves us and made us in His image to reflect His image knows what He's doing. Not only does He know what He's doing, He chose to do it. This is His plan. This is His determination. This is His purpose for our good. That He would receive glory through us. Folks, the best thing that can ever happen to us is that God would be glorified through us. That's the ideal. So, what do we conclude? Well, in the midst of this bitterness and this anguish just pouring out all these words and questions, Job pointed out a couple of very important truths. One is, all people are passing away. It doesn't matter whether we're suffering or we're in prosperity. We are passing. So if you're enjoying prosperity right now, never forget, you're still passing. And if you're suffering affliction right now, don't forget, you're still passing. And when you say, this too shall pass away, remember, it's you. We will pass. We're temporary. Second, he told us that what really matters is eternal. God will always be. And God's word is forever settled in heaven, and it's never going to change. Ever. Therefore, whether we suffer or are prosperous, our hope, our confidence, our security, and therefore our focus needs to be on God. And Job illustrates to us how easy it is for us in these times of trouble and difficulty to allow our focus to get clouded. And we just don't see as clearly as we should, and so we don't see God. And yet He is the one who is desiring and willing to help us to see that it is our affliction that can become so intense that there are those times where we really can't even think about God. You ever gone through that? You want to, you know you should, you know what's right. You even know Bible verses you've learned from the time you were children. And for some reason, in the midst of that affliction, it is just so hard to concentrate on who God is and the great promises that He has made. And you know what? God knows that. And that's why in the midst of the dark night, Job talks about it. We're just fighting with all of our strength, not to lose faith in God. It's when you need to remember. It's good for you to hold on to Him, but He's holding on to you. He has hold of you. And He will not let you go, because you're His child. And He has planned good for you, not evil. He is our hope. He's our confidence. He's our security. He has to be our focus. Father, thank You so much for the story of Job. He's made of the same stuff we're made of. So easy for us to identify with his responses and his feelings. We understand it, even though we've never experienced anything close to his affliction.